Good morning and welcome to this episode of Under the Helmet. The APDFL season, about a month away, a little more, and one of the teams that have made waves as far as garnering attention are the Metro Atlanta Horsemen. Now, they returned to the league with a sterling reputation as far as championships, but also know there's a bunch of conjecture and nonsense. We've already addressed the conjecture and nonsense. I want to talk X's and O's and basic football theory with the head coach, our guy, Coach Will Black. Coach Black, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm all right. Like I said, I'm just trying to dig out from all this damn snow. Coach, what prompted the Horsemen to return to the APDFL?
Competition level. We always wanted to be a part of a tough league, and we heard that, we already been in the APDFL before. Due to politics, that's the reason why we ended up going to other leagues. But it's just the competition level. We hear that's the best competition as far as in the Southeast region. And we feel like, you know, we should be a part of it. That's the reason why we joined back in 2016. That's why we joined for the 2021 season. So just straight up competition.
How long have you been with the Horsemen?
I've been with the Horsemen since 2012. We were me and Coach Tyrone Barnes, which is the owner, we got together when it was the Middle Georgia Wolfpack. And then once the team, you know, had some success as far as the Middle Georgia Wolfpack, he turned the team back to the Metro Atlanta Horsemen. So I've been with them since 2014 when they came back.
How does somebody from Moss Point, Mississippi make their way east?
So it's a long story, but I try to cut it as short as possible. I played my ninth grade football in Moss Point for Morris Point High School, go Tigers. And my mom, she was in a coma while I was in Moss Point, Mississippi with my grandfather. Once she got in a coma and she got herself together, that's when I moved back to Georgia. We stayed in Forest Park, well, Conley, Georgia, which is not too far from Forest Park High School. So I ended up going to Forest Park High School my sophomore through senior year.
Now, for those that don't know, Moss Point is the home of Devin Booker, his father, Melvin Booker, and Toni Sewright, which, random thought, she was the first black woman to win Miss Mississippi in 1987. She was fourth runner-up in Miss America in, I think, that same year. It is an interesting town, and making the transition from Moss Point to Metro Atlanta, what was the biggest culture shock that you had to face?
The biggest culture shock is as far as a lot more was, it was in the city of Atlanta, it wasn't as much as family-oriented. In Moss Point, it's like, you know, everyone on your neighborhood, on your street or town or block or whatever, they knew your name, first, last name, who you belong to. Out here in the city, it's like they just knew you by your nickname. As far as a football culture, I mean, this is in Moss Point, when I was playing there, we worked out, we had practice 6 days a week. Here in Atlanta, when I came to Forest Park, we only practice by Monday through Thursday, games on Friday. We only had 1 day off on out there in Mississippi. So that's
now,
the biggest difference.
Football in Georgia and football in Mississippi is quite different as far as talent level and as far as approach. How have you been able to marry the two different skill sets into your coaching philosophy?
As far as in Mississippi, high school, it was more discipline in Mississippi. As far as in Georgia, like you say, it's a lot more talent. As far as skill, you have an abundance of talent everywhere. So you definitely, it's a coach, like as far as a coach, you definitely want those talented, skilled players, but you definitely want discipline. So merging it in is like just being and treating every player the same. That's all I can really say. To treat everyone the same and not show favoritism. But, you know, talk to people like, talk to these players as a man and treat them like a son. So that's how that's basically how you can merge them together.
From the time you played and the time you start coaching, what has been the most dramatic difference as far as the modern player? What's your biggest beef or gripe with the modern player?
Social media. Social media is a big problem as far as all levels. Like I said, I coach high school football and semi-pro football, so social media is like to coaches at all levels is the devil. It's okay for you to have a profile, but posting up as far as in high school, posting up you smoking weed and counting money and things like that, that is unacceptable. It's not going to help you out. As far as in semi-pro, it's like people don't know how to trash talk, and they, you know, they talk about each other's mom and this, that, and the other. And social media is like really just the devil when it comes to football because it shows too many feelings. It's like it's okay to show emotion, but you don't want to be emotional. And social media brings a lot of emotional people to the forefront. And I don't like it. I don't think no coach really likes it.
I agree with the aspect of the trash talk goes sideways. If you can keep it on the field, it's fine. Or you can just, you know, stuff like that. But like you said, talking about somebody's mom, I'm older, like 46, and my thought was when somebody's mom comes up, talking stops.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we got to go.
Yeah, it's supposed to be some furniture moved at that point.
But yet, and then when the younger player, from what I've seen, when you explain it to them, then they get sensitive and say, no, I was just kidding. No, we are past the joking point.
Oh, yeah.
And we're trying to figure out what we're trying to do.
There's a lot of sensitivity in football nowadays. It's not necessarily considered, quote-unquote, the man sport. But, you know, men play it, but right now it's not what it used to be. And I don't know if it's because of social media or just the evolution of mankind. But it's not like how it used to be with me. When I played, me, you, any one of us that's older, it's definitely a different game nowadays.
Do you think the younger generation is coddled more?
Yeah, they are. They are. They kind of want to be something that they aren't. And I had to be honest with you. I know some people come from certain backgrounds, but it was a lot tougher for people that was born in the 80s rather than the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot. I can't really explain it, but we didn't have social media, and not to say just social media. Technology is different from, you know, we didn't have stuff that we could just disappear and sit at home and people could see everything about us. Like, we don't like to share things because you don't supposed to show your dirty laundry. Nowadays, guys just send it, just show everything, crying on social media and showing their feelings and this, that, and the other. And I was raised totally different. Hey, man, don't let everybody know how you feeling. So
I was raised the same, like, as far as keep your business off the street.
Yeah, exactly.
But now, like, the younger players want to tell their whole life. Like, there are dudes in semi-pro that will say, you know, this player messed with their woman or this player did this. I'm like, wow, y'all have each other's phone numbers. You can just call them and say, hey, we have an issue. We either need to talk it out, take it outside, or be done. This whole long post where everybody got to chime in and think it's fun. No. See, that's...
Yeah. A lot of people want attention.
I'm a dinosaur, and I don't understand this. Like, this is all new to me. Like, the lack of foresight and the fact that as a man, you got to sit there and say, hey, this is my problem with you. We're going to have it out. Talk it, hands. At the end, it's settled. I'm not going to sit there and have, like, a long 5-day thread on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram about how you're this, that, and the third. And I think that's where the failing is. I think some of it is a failing where it just folks just never. I don't think they had it as hard. I really don't think they had it as hard. Like, just like you mentioned, the excess of information. I remember having to go to, when I was in college doing a report, or even high school doing a report, I had to go to the library. I had to find books. You know, I was stuck in the stacks for hours, but now all the access is at your fingertips on your telephone. That's weird to me. Now, your coaching philosophy, from what I have heard and my research says, that you are an intense coach in practice. Have you ever gotten yourself so worked up that you needed to kind of take some Gatorade or some water and like take a breath?
Yeah. It's multiple games, plenty of games. For a lot of games in my past where I was defensive coordinator, I would have to literally take ibuprofen on the sideline or at halftime. As far as in practice, I like for everyone to move. I don't like for anyone to be stagnant. I like to yell. I yell, I scream. I want people to be focused. And I feel like if I lose focus, they'll lose focus. And then in a game, you know what I'm saying, they'll lose focus. And, you know, I just don't like that. I like for it to be, the practices to be so intense, so hard, that the game is actually a lot easier. So,
have you ever had
to, raised.
Exactly. Have you ever had to ear hold a player?
No. I know. I don't know. For some odd reason, the guys respect me.
Good.
I call, you know, I bring them to the sideline, or in practice I bring them up and I just let them have it. And usually I don't get any type of back talk. They respect me a lot. I feel like I'm well respected as far as in the semi-pro world.
Have you ever been trying to discipline a player or try to explain something to a player and they did talk back, and how'd you handle it?
Yeah, there's been plenty of times. I had a few players. I just set them down. And just, hey, you're a little upset. I'm upset, but I'm the coach of this team. You gotta sit down for a little bit, and then maybe I know things get heated and people are playing with a lot of emotions. But I never want my players to be emotional. Once you play with it, once you play emotional, that's when you make mistakes. So, hey, man, just sit down for a second. We'll get over this, cool out, so you can refocus, think about what you've done. Because a lot of players, as far as on my team, as far as the Horsemen, they get emotional, they make mistakes. You say something, they want to say something back. You say, hey, look, it's all good. Just sit down. Such and such go out there. And, you know, they cool out, they chill for a little bit.
As a defensive-minded guy, you came from that side of the ball. When you have a quarterback like Quentin Rucker, how much easier does he make the overall scheme for you?
He makes it a lot easier because he makes opposing offense one-dimensional. And when I say that, Quentin is a great quarterback. He consistently scores touchdowns through the air. And if it's 21-0 in the first quarter, they're gonna have to catch up, and they're gonna try to throw the ball. A lot of coaches in semi-pro level, they panic quickly, so they can get down by 7-0 or 14-0. They're not gonna stick to the running game. They're gonna continue to try to throw the ball, and that just plays in our hands because I feel like we have one of the best defensive lines in the league. Well, I mean, in the nation, actually. I haven't seen the defensive line as intense or pressures the quarterback as hard as my defensive line. We call ourselves the Atlanta Sack Exchange, like the Jets back in the day.
Yes, Mark, was it Mark Gatineau, Joe Klecko, Marty Lyons, and Abdul Salam?
Uh-huh.
I am old as hell, good
Sack
Lord.
Oh, it's all good. It's okay to bring certain things back.
Oh, Lord, I'm old. At the top of my head, I'm like, I have been doing this way too long. When you mentioned your defensive line, and I talked to this man last week, thoughts that it starts all in the middle with Marcus Cortez. When you have a dominant defensive tackle, as a defensive-minded guy, how rare is that, and what does he bring to the table?
It's extremely rare. It's extremely rare. Having a defense, me personally, I feel like the most important thing is having a strong defense. Marcus is an incredible defensive tackle, nose tackle. CJ Benton, Curtis Benton. We had Debo, but we also had DeMonte Queen and Montez Tolbert. We're going to have a Terry Blunt. And we're going to have a dominant defensive line, and it makes it a lot easier to call plays. I mean, you can, especially if it's a team where they try to pass a lot, you can send four, and you know you can have pressure with four. Or maybe five if you feel like it. But you can play zone. It's incredible to be a play caller when your defensive line can dominate any offensive line that they face. So it's just real easy to just play zone behind that. And then, you know, most quarterbacks at the semi-pro level, they can't handle that type of pressure. And they're going to throw picks. They're going to make mistakes before we make mistakes.
That's the ultimate goal for coaches at any level, be it high school, semi-pro, college, or the NFL, to get home with four. If you get home with four, the whole game opens up and you have a good shot of winning that game. If you have to send six, even sometimes seven folks, that's where you leave yourself open for shots down the field. And you mentioned the loss of Darius Gillette, but you have the book in Russia. I want to say his number was 17?
Yeah, that's Curtis Benton.
Man, listen. After talking, actually before talking to Mark and doing my research for these shows, I sat down, jumped in front of YouTube, and I had time. Kids were in school. I had done all my other articles, and I watched the game. That 17, that man's a headache. He gets that corner, and it's just there. Like, he's a step, and it's there. But he's just not, like, just all speed. He actually has a little size where he has a little strength where he may not look like he's going to overpower somebody, but if he catches a tackle slipping and feet crossed or feet too close together, he can use that bull if he had to.
Yeah. He definitely is a strong guy. He has an extremely fast first step. This year is going to be a little different for him because we're going to be – instead of being in a 4-2 defense, we're going to be in the 3-3-5 stack. And he's gonna play. In fact, I tell you this. We had practice Saturday, and we did inside drill. And he was tearing my running backs apart. And, I mean, he made me frustrated because what we try to do is some type of misdirection. And this year I've been talking to him mostly about just straight technique and, you know what I'm saying? Don't just rush up field so hard and make sure that you put your hands on every lineman that, you know, they don't cross their face without getting touched. And he's going to be completely dominant this year. And I know somebody said something about, you know, they're going to be the MVP, defensive MVP or whatever. But he's coming for that. He's coming for that. He's going to be a handful for whatever team that we play.
One of the things that, you know, coming back to the league, that when we had a top 50 list, I will tell you, and I will be honest with anyone who sits on this show, I look at defense first. And if you are a standout defensive player in the front seven, chances are I have seen your tape many times, and the 2 years we have done the top 50, both times were defensive linemen. You had a three technique, and you had a defensive end. Why? Because pass rush matters most on defense. I don't care who you talking to. No corner, no safety, nobody. If you can't get home, you're not winning the game.
Exactly.
And I preach that, and I try to tell people, and people get, I'll be honest, Coach, people get salty, people get pissy about how this player has this offensive stats, there was a cornerback in this league that had 9 interceptions, didn't make the list. Why? Because 6 of them were against a team that didn't win a game.
Oh, yeah.
He was salty, and he was salty for an entire time, and he actually got in his feelings and thought that he wanted to try something. You can try, you know, new food at the buffet. You can try a new route to work. I am not to be tried. When it comes to the Horsemen and when it comes to representing Metro Atlanta, what makes the Horsemen the best team in Georgia?
The Horsemen is like family. Everyone who's played with the Horsemen, we usually do like events with each other. Not only that, we play, you know, we play hard for each other because it's a brotherhood and it's a family. The coaching staff is pretty good. This year we added on Jamal Gordon and the rest of the defense to the coaching staff. So we feel like we have the best coaching staff in Atlanta metro area as far as semi-pro. I've been known to have a dominant defense. Jamal's been known to have a dominant defense. Ty lights up the scoreboard. So it's not just we have great talent, we also have a great coaching staff and a great organization. Like, at one point in time, we feel like we were trailblazers, because at one point in time, no one played in a stadium. The Horsemen always played in stadiums on turf fields, recorded the game, had a lot of photos for players to post up. Our uniforms would always be clean and neat and everything like that. We never shied away from competition. And, you know, one thing that we pride ourselves on is having everybody looking the same. We don't want anyone coming out. If we have black helmets, we don't want anyone coming out and trying to play for us in a white helmet. If we have all black socks, we don't want anyone coming out there with white socks or anything like that. That's a form of discipline. And we're a disciplined team. We're family-oriented as far as, like, kids come to the game from the players and wives and coaches' wives and everything like that. So I feel like we just have better coaches than everybody in the Atlanta metro area as far as semi-pro.
On a personal level, you don't turn, 36? You don't turn 37 until the summer. You're probably going to be one of the youngest coaches in this league. Do you still get the itch to play?
Yeah, sometimes I'm real competitive. But now I feel like cerebral is my game. I'm very competitive when it comes to football as far as anything. Even as a kid, I used to break controllers playing John Madden. So, yeah, I'm very competitive as far as that. Yeah, man, I do, but I'm not about to go out there and bang with some of them guys that have been lifting all day and all night and running. And like I say, we keep it intense. And sometimes when I line up against the offensive line, you know, they put me back in my place sometimes. And it's been known for AJ and Josh Stalls and Darrell Crawford and Alton Price to put me back in my place and say, all right, coach, look, now we let you get through this time, but next time, look, you trying to embarrass us. All right. They done put me on my ass a couple times, too, so they kind of put me back in place when it's like, okay, I might have to come back and show these guys. And they said, nah, coach, you ain't ready. So,
now,
what it is.
I was asked by, well, I'm going to have to throw my men on the bus, but Marcus Cortez, he has the defensive lineman's dream situation. If the Horsemen are up by, let's call it 20 to 30 points, right? And you have the ball inside the five. What is stopping you from letting him, like, take that snap on the center and do what he needs to do?
On the center? Oh, man. what would stop us? I mean, he just had to make sure that he get the snap. Marcus has a tendency to be a little too antsy as far as defensive line. So he might try to move before he actually get the ball and it fumbles. The funny thing about it, one of our offensive linemen, Lawrence Perry, he has the best quarterback rating in the Horsemen history. He's 1-for-1 with 60 yards and one touchdown. So we have fun when we up.
Because, I mean, Marcus said that, you know, this is – I mean, I'm just saying, if you're up and you're in the five, even let him do like a wildcat. Just let that man, you know,
yeah, I mean,
we let him run the ball before.
Yeah, we let him run the ball before. I think
he never said that. He said that he's been deprived.
Yeah, we let him run the ball a couple times. I think he scored one touchdown out of, like, probably three. Because Marcus has been playing for us for almost maybe, if not 8 years, it's been – five or six years. So I'm pretty sure we didn't let him run the ball a few times. Now, I think he only scored one.
Just let me take a little option.
Yeah, I mean,
we have fun.
When we up, we try to have fun. Like, at one point in time, we was playing a team in a championship game. We was blowing them out. I started putting defensive ends at cornerback and things like that. So we have fun once we don't try to make it embarrassing for the opposing team. So that's all.
Now we need to talk about the negative. Now we have a shared negativity. Yeah, we are both fans of the Las Vegas Raiders. I cover the Raiders. I write about them. I have to watch every film, every player, all this stuff. Coach, are you as sick of John Gruden as I am?
The only thing that I like about John Gruden right now is that Derek Carr is progressing. He's getting better as a quarterback. No. As far as the play calling, it's a little suspect. I know they don't have, quote-unquote, a number one receiver, but it's like sometimes it's shots down the field that you can actually take. And he never really takes those shots. He never really takes those shots when it's, like, open. So, but as far as, like, his mindset and what he's trying to do, I feel like he's not aggressive enough for what we looking for. What we trying to do. He's a little conservative sometimes.
They kicked 18 field goals inside of 30 yards. No other team kicked more than 7.
That's what I say, man. He's not aggressive enough for me.
That's all in the red zone. That's all red zone. And Derek Carr is going into year 8, and I just I can't with him. I've had it. I'm tired. Like, it is hard watching a quarterback, and I've said this to people, and people look at me sideways, but tell me if you agree. The only thing physically that separates Derek Carr from Aaron Rodgers is the mentality. Physically, they're similar. They have similar skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
Mentality. Aaron Rodgers will go for it. He will take his shots downfield frequently. Derek Carr will watch Henry Ruggs run cardio routes and not throw him the ball. How do you draft somebody with a 12th pick overall that gets less than 50 targets the whole year?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying as far as the conservative. His mentality, he's just a cool-headed guy, and I don't really care for quarterbacks like that. One, I don't really care for quarterbacks too. I'm a defensive guy. But if you're going to be a quarterback, have some type of edge or a little fire. Even when he tried to be that, it was like no one believed him. So
because it's not his nature.
Yeah, it's not.
Like,
but
if you look at somebody throughout the history of the Raiders, take Rich Gannon. Rich Gannon didn't have half the physical ability as Derek Carr, but Rich Gannon was a winner, and Rich Gannon forced the ball downfield. He took chances.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the kind of get in John Gruden's face and tell him what was for. He was the kind of get in his teammates' face and get what was for. He was a tough quarterback. The Raiders need that quarterback. Derek Carr is about to be 30 years old. He has sat there, and if I live to be 190 years old, and on my last day on this earth, my last words will be this: I wish they wouldn't have paid Derek Carr and paid Khalil Mack. That is the stupidest thing this organization has done in years. And they traded him away. Oh, I'm getting myself mad. Now, how do you draft a run-stuffing defensive end in Cleveland Farrell over Devin White, right? You draft a box safety in Jonathan Abram, and you draft a running back that you could have had in the second round in Josh Jacobs. How do you blow and mess up 3 first-round draft picks in 1 draft?
Hey, man, I didn't understand the Cleveland Farrell pick at all. I was really upset with that. I was like, what is going on? Like, he didn't do much in college.
No.
Like, and I understand that he, you know, he was a part of that fearsome foursome at Clemson, but he wasn't the guy. So, and I mean, that high? Nah, we could have went somewhere else.
And, the safety, right there.
Yeah, the safety, I was like, oh, my goodness. I like hard-hitting safeties, but he couldn't cover at all.
He plays dumb.
So, yeah, so it's like, okay, he can't do anything for us. Josh Jacobs, yeah, you're right. I mean, he's a running back, so you could always get a running back in the second round. I mean, they come a dime a dozen. So it's like, you know, unless it's a Derrick Henry or someone like that where he's, like, massive, he's 6 foot whatever and 260 pounds running a 4.4, okay, yeah, you know, but you could get a running back in the second round. So that kind of was upsetting too.
With Abram, for every hard hit, he will miss a tackle and take the stupidest pursuit angle ever. I still, that Sunday night against the Chiefs, you know the play, Coach. Get the, where the Raiders lost and probably, you know, saw their playoff dreams go up in smoke. You have Patrick Mahomes. It was a third down, like seven?
Uh-huh.
Jonathan Abrams' sole responsibility was to stay with Travis Kelce. Just stay with him. Just stay. Just do that. Stay. Kelce gets behind him. Patrick Mahomes acts like he's about to run across the line of scrimmage. The Chiefs have no timeouts. If he gets the first down, that's fine. They kick the field goal, the game is tied. Who cares? You go to overtime, you take your shots.
Yep.
Abram comes up, leaves Travis Kelce wide ass open. Mahomes sees this as Abram's running from 20 yards away. 20 yards away. He wasn't going to catch him. Over his head, game over. I said a word in front of my four-year-old that I wish I wouldn't have, because he said that word the next day. And I was like, oh, I just, the stupidity of just the bad defense. They even gave Carl Nassib $15 million guaranteed. Carl Nassib should cash his checks with a mask and a gun. Because he is robbing these folks.
There's a lot of people in that defense, on that defense, that's just robbing people. They're on the team, actually. So
now, as an Alabama guy, who would be the best fit for the Raiders as far as the ones coming out? Do you think that Christian Barmore is somebody that would impact that defensive line?
Yeah, he definitely would. He's a big, strong. He's very athletic. One thing that I like about him is his physicality. My thing is, when I tell my defense, yeah, you got to be physical, it's not necessarily hard hits. It's about putting your hands on somebody trying to cross your face all the time. So one thing that if you paid attention, he always put his hands on the opposing guard or center, because they played multiple front defense. And he played one technique in the nose. And he always put his hands on the opposing guard or center. I feel like the Raiders, that's a big thing as far as, you got to look at the division, you know, and they're going to eventually try with Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes. And one thing about it, they need pass rushers. They need somebody in the middle that's going down to stop the run when they try to run. And I feel like he'll take a lot away from those offensive linemen going to the next level. He has to be accounted for.
And if you add in the fact that if the Broncos do make that trade for, let's just say, like a Matthew Stafford, Derek Carr might be the fourth best quarterback in that division.
Yeah, which is crazy.
That's hard. Yeah. The fun part now, being from Mississippi and living in the Atlanta area, you have different yet similar food. What place has the better food, Mississippi or Atlanta, and why?
If you're looking for seafood, it's Mississippi. Mississippi is definitely, it's right there by, where I'm from, is right there by the coast. Soul food, I say Mississippi as well. But if you're looking for a nice steakhouse or, you know, even like fried chicken anywhere, Atlanta is probably the best place. But if it's seafood, you're not going to go to Mississippi and be disappointed. Not going to go to the coast and you'd be disappointed at all. Not on Interstate 10.
What's your go-to seafood when you're back home?
When I'm back home, it's shrimp. I can eat shrimp etouffee, seafood gumbo. I can eat seafood dressing. It's a lot. I don't really eat crab legs or anything like that, but I like, my thing is shrimp. I like shrimp. I like jumbo, gumbo, big jumbo, extra large shrimp.
Now, what is your go-to soul food? And actually, what's your go-to place, regardless of cuisine, in a way? And the one spot you're like, you know what, I could eat here every day.
Ray's on Jonesboro Road. It's a southern place. They have some fried cabbage, and that thing is great. If I don't have a taste for like my go-to like fast food restaurant, Chick-fil-A is like always my number one choice. Everybody knows, you know, Chick-fil-A is, I mean, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I can go there any time of the day.
What's the one item on a soul food menu that you will not eat? The one that people like, you're like, no, I will never eat that.
Oh, I don't like chitlin. I can't do with chitlin.
I can't.
I can't do it.
Just the smell.
The smell, the way they look, the story behind them. It don't matter what you put, you know, any kind of condiment on it, I'm just not going to do it. I never tried it. It just looks nasty. So
I tried it as a child. I remember being a little boy, about 8. Grandma was like, oh, Terry, you got to try this. Because she was from Buena Vista, Georgia, which is like northwest of Macon. So like mid to southern South Georgia. And she puts on my plate. She didn't tell me what it was. I'm like, this is chewy. And she explained, and she told me what it was. I didn't know. Then she explained it. I'm like, nah, never again. It's wrong. Now, I've asked Darius Gillette. I've asked Marcus Cortez. I'll ask you. You can pick one dessert to eat for the rest of your life between these two. Peach cobbler, pecan pie. Which is it?
Ooh, I have to say peach cobbler. I like the crust.
Yes,
it's the crust. If I could have peach cobbler with a lot of crust, I'd be in heaven.
Marcus Cortez said he would pick pecan pie. He's wrong, but he would pick pecan pie.
Well, you know, they make a lot of mistakes, man. You know, he young. He gonna make a lot of mistakes. He don't know good food. He trying to lose weight and all that stuff, so. He probably he making a lot of mistakes there.
What's the one piece of advice you would give 16-year-old Will Black right now after everything you've learned?
Listen to your mother. Listen to your mom. My mom, she told me a long time ago that I'm young. And she was like, I see coaching, you being around a lot of kids and actually coaching, because if you love the game so much, you need to go into coaching. I didn't get into coaching right off the bat. It took me a while to find this calling. But once I got into coaching, I found out that I was pretty good at it. I have a talent that a lot of coaches don't have, and that's just being able to lead men, lead kids, lead little boys. I coached at every level, besides, you know, from semi-pro to high school to little league. And that's just, listen to your mom. Like, she knew from a young age what I was going to be doing for the rest of my life.
When you look at football from the outside, I mean, you're a football lifer, and for those people who don't understand how much the role of a strong, helpful, mentoring coach can have in a young black man's life, explain to them why it's important that black kids see a strong coach, strong teacher as someone to emulate.
Because right now in the world, especially if we're going to talk about just the black community, there's not too many men that are in the household, so when they in the world, someone has to be that father figure. So I took it upon myself when I started coaching high school football to actually become that father figure and just let a lot of young men know how to be a man, because they don't see it at home. And they're not going to see it out in just everyday life from, like, depending on, like, if someone grew up where I grew up, they're going to see the drug dealers and, you know, the pimps or whatever. They're not going to see men that went to college, men that work in a 9-to-5 is actually the best thing for you. And they're gonna try to emulate those type of guys. But when it all said and done, you see guys like Coach Black or Coach Witt or Whiteley or Coach Witt or any other coach that comes upon in a kid's life that's actually spending time with them, that's showing them, okay, this is what you need to be doing, and, you know, basically taking care of them and also disciplining them. Hopefully they take heed to it and say, hey, this is what I want to, this is the type of guy I want to be. Want to be an upstanding guy in the community and just in the world, period. So hopefully, they see that and they, you know, that's what they emulate instead of somebody like a rapper or something like that, because there's a lot of things that you could do besides just wanting to play football or wanting to just be in sports, period, or wanting to be in entertainment. So hopefully they see that. They see people like me, you, and other guys that's in the semi-pro level and look at us and say, okay, I want to take heed and do some things like that.
Now, as a coach, have you ever had to take aside a veteran player when you've seen that, in all honesty, they don't have it anymore? Have you ever had the, it might be time to hang them up talk?
Yeah. Yeah.
How hard
yeah.
is that?
Yeah, yeah. It's hard because you don't want to battle with some of these guys. With the guys, you've been in battle with some. You know what they can do, but once you have a young guy that's coming up, you know, you let them know, like, hey, man, you're not moving how you used to move, you're not doing things like you used to do. And he's probably feel like he's doing it, but he's just not. And it's very hard because it's like, okay, man, it's time for you to go ahead and let people, let it hang up. Like, put your cleats up, man. You might want to get into coaching. It's tough, especially coming from me because I'm young. And you still have, especially at the time years ago, you had guys that were playing for the Horsemen that was in their 30s, and I was 29. And me telling them, like, hey, man, you might want to just hang it up. It's over with for you. So it's a very tough call, but as a head coach, I know a lot of people would rather you be honest with them and straightforward with them instead of just beating around the bush.
There is a saying that it is always best to leave the party too early than it is too late. Now, one of the last questions is this. You're in Atlanta. Just say you were given the ultimate ability to do whatever. Fix the Falcons. How would you?
How would I fix the Falcons? I feel like the Falcons need to get away from Julio Jones. I feel like they need to really become more run dominant, because when they went to the Super Bowl, I believe they had either the top three or the leading rusher in Devontae Freeman, or was just leading in yards. But Matt Ryan is a play action quarterback. He's not going to take over an entire game by himself. He's never been considered an elite quarterback. He's been a top-tier quarterback, but he's never been like that top-three quarterback that can say, hey, okay, I throw it about 40 times and we're going to win the game. But with a weapon like Julio Jones, he needs his target. If you remove Julio Jones and become more run-dominant, the offense, I feel like the offense will still put up points. The defense, as far as stopping people, man, those days are over. Those days where you're going to shut people out defensively, it's over. And that's hard for me to say as a defensive guy, but is it too much skill on the offensive level? These offensive coordinators, they done got better over the years, and we haven't caught up as far as defensive coordinators, defensive coaches. And the best way to keep – you got to keep them off the field, because they make too many mistakes, way too many mistakes. So if you run the ball, keep the defense off the field, then you'll be in a better state.
Now we discussed Grady Jarrett. I am high on Grady Jarrett. I think he's one of the underrated three techs in the league as far as being able to explosive and being able to beat his man with pure speed. We talked about if the Falcons do land a 3-4 guy, would he fit as a 5 tech? I went back. I think I go back and forth with it because I wouldn't want to waste that athleticism on someone who might have to take on two blockers and let the outside linebacker have all the pass rush. That's hard for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think Grady Jarrett is going to be able to flourish in that. As far as him being in a – hopefully they do a lot of more multiple fronts rather than just 3-4. You just told me something. I don't pay attention to the Falcons at all. But you just told me something. So
no, I said if they do. If they bring it up.
Oh, if they, yeah. If they do, yeah, it's not going to work for him. It's not going to work.
It doesn't fit
work
his game.
At all, but yeah, he's too. That's like saying Warren Sapp. Go ahead and be nice. Warren Sapp did have a few good years when he did play defensive end for the Raiders, but Grady Jarrett is not that caliber. He's not that great of an athlete, but he's a pretty good athlete. You put him one on one against a guard, he's gonna beat him. That's the problem though. He doesn't have a counterpart. He doesn't have someone that can say, okay, I'm going to be that. That's all I want to be is a one technique, take on two blocks either side, and he could be one-on-one with a guard.
I swore that Rashid Hagerman was going to be that guy, but he couldn't stay out of trouble instead of doing stuff that is stupid.
Yeah, it's tough in Atlanta. I always told people, Atlanta Falcons fans, that Atlanta is a party city. So it's a lot of distractions. And don't get me wrong, New York has a lot of distractions, Houston and L.A. and Miami. But Miami, you know, they coming up, it takes a tough coach. They have to have a disciplinary coach. Like, okay, yeah, you came late. You ain't gonna, we're going to find you such and such or this, that, that, and the other. Because it's just too much to do. It's too much trouble to get into. Yeah, it's too much trouble to get into. In Atlanta from the strip clubs. I mean, they got clubs that close the dang on 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's just too many distractions. I feel like it's never going to work for Atlanta Falcons. They're never going to get a Super Bowl win.
They had
just because
one.
Of the culture of the city.
They had one. I'm sitting there, and being a Raiders fan, you know how we dislike the New England Patriots. And I'm like, okay, the Falcons are about to do something. I sat there. Well, you know what? I'm going to sit there and not have this beer. I'm going to sit there and enjoy the fact that the Falcons are about to do this. Oh, okay, the Patriots scored. That's fine. It's oh. Oh, no. Oh,
uh-oh.
This is too close.
Yep.
Well, damn. And I was like, when I saw that overtime, I'm like, are you kidding? I was like, I was mad. And I'm not even a Falcon fan. I just didn't want to see the Patriots win. And I was like,
oh. Yeah.
And, yeah, that, but this will be the last question. Who is the greatest rapper in Atlanta history?
And you're going to be surprised. The greatest rapper in Atlanta's history is CeeLo Green.
Ooh.
Yeah. I went there.
Wow. I thought I was about to hear some Andre 3000.
CeeLo Green.
What makes CeeLo the man?
Okay, his storytelling, his delivery, his flow, and his creativity. Andre 3000, he's very creative, but CeeLo Green is like he's out of this world. Just the songs that he did with the Dungeon Family, Goody Mob, and that featured Outkast, he's destroying Andre 3000. Destroying them. And he has that soulful voice that just shows as like the symbol of the South. When you think about the South, you think about someone who has that voice when he sings. You know what I'm saying? So CeeLo Green is the best rapper in Atlanta history. And we can, whoever want to tell me different, we can go bar for bar. To any rapper out there, Sci-Hi, any rapper out there, B.O.B., Andre 3000, it don't matter.
T.I.?
Bar for bar. Even T.I.
Wow.
Even T.I.
Damn.
He's destroyed. Like, if you go back and you listen to the verses when he was Goody Mob and all the Dungeon Family and the features of the Outkast and everything. And what's crazy, people, a lot of people didn't know he was supposed to be a part of Outkast. He was supposed to be a part of Outkast.
Now, before we step out, how much are you looking forward towards the classic and getting to strap it up against the Alabama Blackhawks?
Man, I'm looking forward to. They're the only team that I'm focused on right now, man. They're the only team that I'm focused on. Me and the quarterback, Kyle, we have a love-hate, like, little relationship. I don't know him personally, but he's, like, the only quarterback that really just that had me in just my mind was all the way gone. I couldn't really make the adjustments because when we played the Opelika Chiefs years ago, when we was in the APDFL, they scored 20 points on us. And the first drive, I felt like I wasn't prepared for the no huddle. And I didn't prepare my team the best that I could. So I'm taking it a little personal, especially if he's playing. I'm hearing that he's coaching baseball. He might not be there. He may be there. But I'm taking it personal no matter what. And plus, I like playing against Alabama teams. Like, Alabama teams, no matter where, like, where in the state of Alabama, they could be in Mobile or Prattville, Birmingham, Gadsden, Anniston, no matter where, Huntsville. They are a tough team, and I just love competition. I love competition. So it's gonna be a battle, man. They looking at the preseason game. It's totally gonna be a totally different team. It's gonna be a lot more disciplined, and then we're gonna be actually attacking the line of scrimmage and making better tackles and causing turnovers defensively. Offensively, I think we're gonna put some points up. We're gonna put a lot of points up against them, because if they come out in that 4-4 defense, we're going to eat that shit alive.
That's the one thing, though, about their front four. They have who many regard as two top five, even one top three pass rushers, and Justin Robinson and Patrick Campbell. On either mm-hmm. side of the ball, they're going to test their tackles.
Yeah. So we have some pretty good bookends as far as like tackles. We got some anchors. They kind of legendary. Lawrence Perry and AJ Spears. They looking forward to it.
I can't wait.
It's gonna be one of those battles where a lot of people already anticipate the Horsemen to be a certain type of way. We totally revamped our entire team, our whole philosophy, from the offense to the defense. So looking at what we did in the past is not really going to necessarily tell you anything. We're going to be doing a lot of misdirections. We're going to put some no huddle out there. We're also going to do, we're going to be in a lot of formations, everything. Not going to be the same Horsemen team from the past. And that's one thing that I wanted to do with this season, because I know what's coming with the APDF show. Like I said, we joined this league because of competition. And I'm in love with playing the Blackhawks first. I'm kind of upset that the Georgia Cobras ain't on our schedule, though. Or the Mississippi Dynasty, because I've been calling them out for years. But if we got to take our frustration out on the Blackhawks, then it is what it is. I hope they're ready for it, though.
Coach Black.
I hope they're ready for it.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Under the Helmet. I can't wait. Good luck to the season. The Horsemen will definitely be a team to watch. I appreciate you stopping in,
yeah.
Coach.
Oh, no problem. Anytime.
This has been another episode of the Under the Helmet podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.